A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald. Narrated by Gary Bennett. Author's note. Strewn between drug use, groin malice, and cursing on a level tantamount to sacrilege are gratuitous mentions of bureaucracy. These bureaucratic references may not be for the weak of heart. Chapter 7. With morning came nature's imperative, and when on a diet of mostly canned meats, it is an imperative that must be taken care of immediately. Arthur and Robbie walked out from the back of the van shortly after waking up, too preoccupied to take heed of the dust that had buried it. After a light breakfast of instant mashed potatoes, with a large colored pill and whiskey for Robbie, they set out to manage the damage. The storm had left nothing behind, but only because it had ground everything into nothing. The dust plains were as barren as they had been the day before. A subtle but familiar green sunrise kissed the dead horizon. Arthur thought it was as beautiful as it was somber and terribly morose. Arthur wasn't sure what to do with his newfound trust for Robbie. This was the first morning he had actually seen her without her hat or sunglasses, and though her afro had been squished by her hat, she looked pretty. More so because she radiated a confidence Arthur was envious of and severely lacked. She half smiled at him, then stuffed a cigarette in her mouth and uttered a string of curses that would make even Satan blush and made Arthur queasy. Arthur was really not sure of what to do with his newfound like or trust. He had no doubt that Robbie could do her job, and she had already proven to be an asset in their quest to administer a census. But her mood swung to anger quickly, and her appetite for chemicals was hand to mouth. Arthur wasn't sure if he had seen her sober yet. But the most important question had yet to be answered, and it was one that had to be before he could commit to a friendship. Would she let him do his job? Robbie regarded Arthur dully and stretched her sore muscles. If we start digging soon, we might be able to get this vicious whale out of the dust before half of the day is gone, she said, dragging two shovels out of the van. She handed one to Arthur, then pointed at the van's top. Once the dust is off, we dig there and get behind it. Getting it upright with just the two of us will be harder than tipping it. Do you think we can do it? Arthur asked. If we don't, we'll have a little under a week's food before we have to play a game of Russian roulette where the winner eats the loser. After that, pray for the quick death of a raider. Robbie struck ground with her shovel. Their digging was slower than yesterday, having felt the full burden of it in their tired flesh, but they dug. The sun hung like a molten disk above the sand-covered plains. Despite the raging ball of fusion that was once worshipped as a god tearing through endless space to reach the earth, it was a cool day. A slight breeze kicked up specks that might once have been the bones of humanity, and tiny whirlwinds danced on the surface of an area that was once pregnant with plenty. They dug. Their shadows shrank, and the former god above them followed its clockwork path forward. So much dogma had been written about man's gods in such a vast amount of time, but in the end, man robbed his gods of their final purpose, to end man. And man did it with the same burning fury that fueled their first god, the sun. Maybe the old ways were best, for at least there was without doubt that the sun had no idea of man's plight. It would continue on with or without them. Still, they dug. Their shadows started to grow once more. Their first chore done, Robbie jacked the van from its side as far up as it would go. Then the two tied cords of rope around it. Both man and woman pulled on this cord, laboring to get it back on its tires. When it was finally upright, Robbie patted Arthur on the back, and they collected their gear. Robbie gassed up the van from their supplies, which Arthur made a note of. Soon they would both be inside the van, sipping on precious water and chasing the sun in its constant journey west. Though the air was heavy with the bodacious madness of rock and roll, Robbie kept it at a lower volume, inviting conversation if Arthur felt the need for it. Neither had the strength to talk, but found that sharing silence was no longer awkward. It was, in fact, companionable. The appetite for socialization was not filled for some time. Robbie drove the lumbering van with the intensity of a banshee. The dust plains eventually gave way to cold, scraggly rocks and barren dead trees that splintered upward, now tombstones to their former glory. The van moved up towards a mountain, and they climbed an elevation. Light chatter swelled into conversation as the sun slowly dipped into the horizon. "What exactly is the plan for when we find the poor bastard out here?" Rabia asked. "You don't know?" Arthur replied, more in annoyance than surprise. "Forgive me if I have been too busy digging like a lunatic to do my homework, G-Man. My job is to protect you. I'd bring you back alive, and I don't have to worry about sleeping outside the bunker and wondering where my next meal will come from. What exactly is your job?" Arthur clicked the head of his pen. The mission and its futility weighed on his mind. So far, they had survived the cruelties of nature. Man's cruelties were always worse. He repeated the comforting pleasure in his mind. Only the best. And honestly tried at that moment to believe that they would make it home. He licked his dry lips and, in no confidence, said, "We are going to seek out people and find out where they live and under what circumstances. The moment we see somebody, we are to ask if they have an income and how many people they live with. This will help us ascertain which tax bracket they belong to for collection and auditing purposes." Robbie put out her cigarette and, because of the dimming light, removed her sunglasses. She looked at Arthur briefly before regarding the road and asked, "What if we don't find anyone?" "In that case," Arthur replied, "we search until we are halfway through our supplies and then return home." A mischievous grin crept onto Robbie's face. "So let's say we decide to camp out here," she said. "Like the good patriots we are, we decide to take advantage of one of the United Waste's many great national parks." At this, she waved a hand towards the corpses of trees and earth that surrounded them. "After a short vacation, we return empty-handed. No one would be any the wiser." "Not an option," Arthur said in disdainful impatience. "It is our civic duty and our job." "Yes, yes," Rabia cut him off. "Damn it, well, I tried, you OCD maniac. But finding people means finding trouble. It was a dog-eats-dog world out there before the dogs had to contend with us eating them." She lit another cigarette. "This should be easier than an audit," Arthur said, more to assure himself. "The Deputy Commissioner of Operations said himself that we shouldn't expect more than a handful of people." They were reaching the zenith of the mountain, and stars had begun to shine through the sky once dominated by the sun's hateful glare. Robbie slowed down for the first time in hours. She regarded Arthur with a glance. "Yeah, well, we will have to go looking for that handful tomorrow. It's getting dark. We should get this whale off the road and out of sight. Find a comfortable place to sleep." She turned the van into a small clearing. Arthur made no objection. He was tired from the day's labor and was happy to be able to stretch his legs and eat before having a well-earned sleep. The moon, man's other old god, had replaced the sun and taken its turn to reign the sky. The earth that imprisoned it in a gravitational tether, finally as barren, almost as dead. The moon's soft glow lit up the clearing, which helped Arthur and Robbie navigate their new campsite. Arthur relished being able to walk, his legs now flowing with newly circulated blood. They came to a large horseshoe of boulders. This had the benefit of keeping them out of sight from the road, but it obscured their view of the land. Before Arthur could regard these boulders, Robbie was already climbing the top of one to scan the horizon. It was hard for Arthur not to admire her under the soft glow of the moon. In a moment, Robbie had climbed to the top of a boulder, hands on her hips in triumph. But then, rather suddenly, her hips stiffened and her arms dropped to her sides. "Holy soul-ripping terror," she uttered, and then, with a demented urgency, she yelled for Arthur. "Get your paper-filing ass up here, G-Man, now!" Arthur was nowhere as skilled at climbing as Robbie, but with a few fumbles and awkward footing, he was able to get up the old rock and sit down next to her. It didn't take long for him to see it. Out in the distance, miles from the bottom of the other side of the mountain, were lights. Not just a few, but a couple dozen. They were far-off glimmers in a gulf of darkness, but they were there. Arthur's heart sank faster than a U-boat being spotted by a destroyer.
"Does this look like a handful of people to you?" Rabia said harshly. "My God, man, that is a village, maybe even a city of people down there."
Arthur's gut reaction was to squeal in terror as he was faced with the same fate that killed his father. He was looking down into a valley that would only bring doom for him and his new enforcer. But they had to go down there. It was their job, their duty. It was what Henry S. Boyd expected of him.
"That is going to be a lot more paperwork than I had hoped," Arthur said morosely.
Rabia mimed choking him with great intensity. But as the realization of what was before them hit her, she crossed her arms, and Arthur let out an extensive sigh.
"This might be a good thing," Arthur said, trying it aloud to see if he believed it. "If there are that many of them in a stationary settlement like that, then they are probably organized. If they are organized, they might be more amicable to our survey taking."
"There is nothing good about them being organized. If they are organized, then they are organized to defend, and nothing is more threatening to a stationary people like outsiders," Rabia said calmly. "You still hell-bent on doing this?" she asked.
"The taxes from a settlement that large are too big to ignore," Arthur replied. "The Revised National Emergency Operations Guide has standards that can forgive their back taxes, but once the IRS is made aware of them, they are subject to current taxes."
"Were you beaten with an abacus as a child? Look at that monster! Those people will eat us alive, and that is not hyperbole. This is not a fucking clerical error to fix. This is life and death."
"I know," said Arthur, terror gripping his heart. Rabia jumped down from the boulder. The moment her feet made landfall, she walked to the van and downed a hefty amount of wild turkey.
Arthur followed, but afraid of the height, he worked his way down slowly. Once he was on the ground, Rabia stopped pulling from the bottle and looked at Arthur with somber eyes.
"I know that there's no stopping you," she said, "and I can't just go back without you. And despite your best efforts, you have grown on me."
She said this with disdain. Arthur began to smile, but she cut the head off it.
"Grown on me like a rash? This is the dumbest goddamn thing we could ever die for."
She took another swig and immediately lit a cigarette.
"If we go down there for your demented office errand, we go down there under my lead."
Arthur nodded, and a dreadful silence surrounded them. The quiet was interrupted by a sharp succession of pen clicking. Nothing was playing out the way it should. He should be safe in the bunker, running inventory and perfecting spreadsheets. He knew it wasn't fair to blame the deputy commissioner. There was no way for him to know there would be an entire civilization to count. Yet, after seeing just how insanely meticulous Henry S. Boyd was, it was hard not to think that he wasn't capable of an oversight, no matter how small. Rabia regarded Arthur with a kinder gaze, then took a drag off her cigarette. "We drive halfway down this hateful mountain early tomorrow, at 4 in the morning, slowly and without headlights. We find a good place to hide the van, and then we walk there. Any questions?"
"Why are we walking there?"
Arthur said, nearly indignant, his muscles sore from 2 days of digging.
"Because they'll see us driving from miles away, G-Man. We don't exactly want to sneak up on them, but we don't want to loudly announce that we are coming either. Besides our little federal bunker, no one drives except caravans and land pirates, and one of those is enough to get a town locked and loaded. Any more questions?"
Arthur shook his head.
"Good. We bring only the bare essentials, and we make no mention of transportation. Under no circumstances do you tell them about our van. If they haven't killed us, and against all odds you count those heads without me having to pull the trigger, then we come back."
Arthur listened studiously.
"I think we only have enough forms for that settlement, so we can go home after that," he said. "You goddamn better believe we go home after that," Rabia screeched. "Mother of a filthy swine, I don't care if you only fill out half of them. We turn our tails and run crying home. Do you understand?"
Arthur smiled, realizing that Rabia's yelling was only theatrics, so long as she didn't have a gun in her hand. Then she grabbed her shotgun.
"I'm going to check our perimeter. We sleep in the van again tonight. We leave no sign of camp, Rabia said, walking toward the entrance of the horseshoe, paying no mind to Arthur's pen clicking. Beneath the dread and behind the deathly nervousness, there's something brewing within Arthur that only another bureaucrat could understand. This was not something that he could admit to Rabia, and in fact, it was hard enough to admit to himself. This feeling, this terrible and almost evil feeling he'd had? Giddiness. Giddiness because there were blank forms to be filled out that would set in motion a new tax era for the United Wastes. It was like a burning sensation, one that would only numb once there were names and numbers written down in official black ink. Druids of old wrote down sigils that would otherwise devour their psyche. The only difference here is that maybe the sigils were useful. He and Rabia had more in common than he first suspected. It manifested differently, but without a doubt, they were both driven by a madness. And they both craved more of it. About the author. M.P. Fitzgerald is an author and humorist dedicated to injecting the feverish gonzo style into fiction. You can get Memos from the Wasteland, which is the official prequel to this book, free. It contains hilariously bleak office drama, Robbie's diary, and Arthur's last letter from his father. To get your copy, just head over to his website at mpfitzgerald.art. You'll also get free updates on future audiobooks and more. We hope you have enjoyed A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Text copyright 2019 by M.P. Fitzgerald. Production copyright 2021 by M.P. Fitzgerald.
Music by Dustmice. Available on all streaming services and dustmice.bandcamp.com.
Oh, hi there. This is M.P. Fitzgerald, author of A Happy Bureaucracy, and I'm pretending to play the jazz piano. You know, advertisements were invented by the devil to make Ayn Rand happy, and no one wants to make Ayn Rand happy. But audio production is expensive, so to keep commercials off this podcast, I've got all three ebooks in the Happy Bureaucracy series rolled into one for the price of a single book, which honestly is the best way to support this podcast. Just check the description for a link and tell your friends about the crazy shit you have been listening to have less friends. Thanks. And now, for something completely different.